Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome, everybody, to the Week 15 edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Show, the flagship edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Drew Dinkmeyer in the host chair alongside Ricky Sanders. We're here to break down this huge 13-game main slate. No teams on bye at Week 15, only 3 regular season weeks left. Lots of playoff implications for those of you playing season-long fantasy football. We'll break down the games from more of a DFS perspective. Ricky Sanders, you ready to go for all 13 games this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of games to choose from. I go to a place for ice cream, and you give me 3 flavors, and I can't choose. So 13 games is quite a bit, but we're going to make some decisions this week. Looks like a fun one, and yeah, I think I'm as ready as I'm ever going to be to talk this slate.
Ricky Sanders, not a fan of Baskin-Robbins. Too many flavors for him. Let's get into this slate. Let's start. If you're familiar with the format here, I'll break down kind of the injuries and the news and notes, kick it to Ricky. He'll give a little bit of a DFS take. I'll give the same, and we'll move forward. We'll go left to right for those of you premium subscribers at Daily Roto in terms of the games that they're listed in the optimizer. We'll start with Denver visiting Kansas City. Denver, you know, nearly double-digit underdogs here on the road. There are some injury notes to cover in this one. For the Broncos, Noah Fant left last week's game after a huge performance in Houston, a performance that we were on, frankly, and was one of the better things that we hit on last week in terms of using Fant with Houston stacks. Not exactly the way we expected it to work, but it did work. Fant left last week's game with a hip injury and foot injuries. He did not practice on Wednesday. With the Broncos at this point in the season having nothing to play for, I'd be cautious there. And that injury really unlocks this whole game for me. So that injury is a big one for me. And then on the Chiefs side, Damian Williams was back at practice. He's been battling that rib issue that's kept him out a couple weeks. I think last week, if we saw anything, it's that Andy Reid and the Chiefs do not trust LeSean McCoy and Darwin Thompson. They signed Spencer Ware off the street, and he led the team in snaps with a 40% snap rate. So I think these are two kind of big injuries in terms of the appeal of this game. Do they matter to you, Ricky? And it's weird to even ask, are you interested in a Chiefs game on this big 13-game slate?
Yes. I think last week we saw that the vulnerability of the Denver defense. Patrick Mahomes is a guy who, you know, you look at our value rankings, he is not in the top 5, which I was a little surprised about. But I'm wondering if when the ownership percentages comes out, that means the public is not going to be on him as well. And, I mean, a 27.5 implied total, and you look at this Damian Williams thing, I think it's going to be a matter of pain tolerance is what they said when the injury happened. So, I mean, he's their most trusted back. Obviously, they're still going to run the ball and use their running backs regardless of the health of him. But I think you could see a healthy dose of Patrick Mahomes in the passing game, at least early on. And then the question is, how competitive does Denver stay? And I think if Denver stays competitive at all, you're going to want to run it back with someone. The question remains who. With Noah Fant being questionable, I think Cortland Sutton would be your other logical option. But you look at the way that the Chiefs defense has worked this year, 30th in DVOA against the rush, Drew, are you willing to go to Philip Lindsay as a tournament play this week? Because it's one of those things where you've got to stack. Do we run it back with the running back? We've said no a bunch of times this year, like a Derrick Henry slate. And Derrick Henry has been just fine on the other side of stacks. I think I'm okay with it. I wouldn't force it. It would be a boost scenario. But if I had, you know, 10% Patrick Mahomes, I would want at least one or two lineups with Philip Lindsay as well, just to kind of diversify.
Yeah, so I'm torn on this. Lindsay's price tag on DraftKings is up to 5,600 now. So pretty tough, you know, ceiling performance to hit. He has slipped past Royce Freeman in terms of the usage over the last month or so, especially on the ground. But he's not picking up quite enough targets for me yet. And I don't know that I see Denver having multi-touchdown upside. So I'm probably out on Philip Lindsay at that price tag, which is why Noah Fant makes so much of a difference for me in terms of this game. I'm comfortable with Kansas City, and I'm comfortable with the passing attack and investing in GPPs. I'm not going to be comfortable with Damian Williams, I don't think, even though I think he's the only running back they've shown any level of confidence in. I just think first week back from a rib injury, they might, you know, they'll probably go with a rotation, and I'm just out on investing in that at this point. I'm pretty much, you know, on my way to going broke on Sammy Watkins, so I'm pretty much out there. Tyreek Hill has a pretty good price tag, so I think, you know, you could go Mahomes to Tyreek Hill. But if you were to bring it back, it would be Sutton, Fant that are the guys that are interesting to me. And Kansas City is a team that has generally been beat over the middle. You know, they're not a team that's giving up a ton on the outside. They're giving up kind of over the middle slot receivers, tight ends. We saw Julian Edelman have the big game last week. And so Fant is kind of a big deal for me. So I think I'm not likely to play this game as much as I normally would a KC game unless Fant is healthy. And even then, it's probably going to be more like correlation plays on the skill players. I'm having a hard time double stacking Mahomes. I just don't see Denver kind of keeping this offensively competitive. Now, Denver's played really well with Drew Lock. Certainly, you could make the case for Drew Lock, given the way he played against Houston. But he's up at 5,700 now. And, you know, Sutton's a decent price tag at 5,900. But Fant is, you know, the key for me. So I really think that's the decision point for me. I know Deshaun Hamilton played a bunch of snaps last week, finally got up into that like 70-80% range that we expected when they traded Emmanuel Sanders. And he will get some of those slot snaps as well. But he's just been so unreliable, and the target volume hasn't been there, so I can't really go there. So I'm kind of stuck on this game, at least early in the week, until the injuries settle. We'll see what happens there. But my early inclination is I won't have a ton of stacks from this game. Next game on the docket, Seattle travels to Carolina. Seattle, nearly a touchdown favorites on the road here. Obviously, Seattle lost Rashad Penny in that primetime game for the season. You know, questionable about when he will be able to return next season with the ACL injury. That's the big one there. Jadeveon Clowney dealing with a core injury and an illness mispractice on Wednesday, along with Dwayne Brown. So those are some, you know, line, defensive and offensive line issues for Seattle. In terms of the Panthers, the big skill position player injury is Greg Olsen, who returned to practice in a limited capacity, working his way back from a concussion. I just don't see any reason that they would rush Greg Olsen back, given it's kind of a lost season, given this point in his career, given, you know, it's a concussion. So we're still leaning that he's not going to play, which would make Ian Thomas a play. But we'll follow those two injuries. I think, you know, the Ian Thomas one is a big one from a skill position player. In terms of Seattle, you know, Jadeveon Clowney does make a big difference for their defense, but I don't think it substantially impacts how you approach this game from a DFS perspective. Ricky, are you in on Seattle and Carolina?
I'm definitely in on Seattle. I'll tell you that much. I mean, Carolina has been the defense that I've been targeting running backs all year long, and now you don't have to worry about that scenario in which you have to guess between Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. Without Rashad Penny, this is Chris Carson's backfield. You look at Carolina, they have been getting gashed by backs all year long, 32nd in DVOA against the position. Devontae Freeman, a guy who has had kind of a down year last week, gets it done, almost 20 DraftKings points against this defense. Chris Carson on an offense that, at least in this game, is more run-oriented, but just a team that I think is going to focus on him in general at 7,500 is a guy, and you could call me crazy here, that I am considering locking on this slate. I think that's a great price for a guy who I consider to be a true RB1 in this matchup, and I can't imagine you know, not going over the field on him, and it's to the point because I love this matchup so much, and because he's the only guy in the backfield, I'm willing to take a shot on him. Other than that, I also have some interest in Jacob Hollister in this matchup, just looking at Carolina here. I mean, you look... Sorry, I'm the other side. I have interest in Ian Thomas, assuming he's the guy who's healthy, so, against Seattle. You look at Seattle, they've quietly been a defense you could target the tight end against. Number two, like everyone talks about Arizona, but this defense, there's been a lot of formidity against as well. And Ian Thomas looked like he was clearly the guy in absence of Greg Olsen. So if you get him out again, his price did go up something like $600 on DraftKings, but he's still considered a cheap tight end in my book at $3,100. You're going to need him out, but it's another defense where it's a good matchup. And like the offense didn't change too much without Greg Olsen. They were still throwing to the same four guys. So Ian Thomas is the tight end I like here. I don't mind Hollister either, by the way. He's $3,800. Thomas is the guy I wanted to focus on. So those are the two guys in this game. I don't know if it's like a full game stack for me, though.
Yeah, Thomas, 85% of the snaps last week, double-digit targets. We talked about his athletic profile being an intriguing one, and certainly the price tag didn't rise too much. I mean, on FanDuel, he went from $4,000 to $5,300. On DraftKings, he went from $2,500 to $3,100. Still very playable at those price tags. Agree with your take on Chris Carson. I think this is one of those games that, you know, Seattle's passing game kind of limping to the finish line here with Tyler Lockett battling some injuries, and this looks like a spot where the Carolina's been so vulnerable against the run that Seattle can kind of come in and do what they usually want to do, which is just run the football a ton. So then Chris Carson, I think he'll be one of the most popular backs on the slate with good reason. CJ Procise was playing behind him last week, and Procise came in and only garnered 15, 16% of the snaps, something like that. So it was very much the Chris Carson show, despite them playing from well behind a game script that you would think, if any, for CJ Procise to play would be the one. And, you know, Jacob Hollister, you mentioned Ian Thomas, Hollister as well. He's been seeing a rising target share as well, and he's pretty affordable, $3,800 on DraftKings. I think he could be in the mix for tournaments. I never mind playing Russ in tournaments at kind of low ownership, but the price tag is pretty full here. The receiving core has been more difficult to hone in on, given that they've been splitting snaps a little bit more, and they've been playing, like, six guys pretty much every week, like, you know, Lockett was at 90% of snaps, then Metcalf 80%, Josh Gordon 55%, Malik Turner 22%, David Moore 20%, last week Jerron Brown 13%. They're just starting to get away from like that kind of condensed target share that we like to see when we're stacking. So probably a Chris Carson and Carolina players back correlation type game for me. I think obviously Carolina still has this really condensed offense. DJ Moore, Ian Thomas, Christian McCaffrey, obviously still all very much in play. I will note that Curtis Samuel's target share has been steadily declining, in part because they've just had a harder time trying to get the ball down the field. They've been having to, you know, they've been getting a lot of pressure in Kyle Allen's face, and he's been having to dump the ball off. Christian McCaffrey's been the beneficiary of that. But I think, you know, Curtis Samuel, it looked like for a while that people were excited that he was going to be kind of a buy low candidate, but it seems like they're having trouble getting the ball to him as they've had some offensive line struggles. So he's still really cheap. I think he's viable as a like low percentage owned MME play, but I like DJ Moore, Ian Thomas, and Christian McCaffrey more in that offense right now. Let's move to one of the biggest games of the week in terms of, you know, the NFL playoff race. Houston travels to Tennessee.
Yep.
The two teams are tied for the AFC South lead here. Huge total in this game. We are not used to AFC South games leading the way in terms of total, but a 51 total here. Tennessee 3-point favorites at home. In terms of injury issues, Will Fuller was limited with a hamstring injury. Obviously, we have to pay attention to that one. That really shook up the slate last Sunday morning. Yep. It made Kenny Stills, Duke Johnson, and DeAndre Hopkins all pretty solid values. What ended up happening is Kike Kute played a ton and was on the field a ton and got a lot of targets. It was not Stills, but I think those are things to pay attention to. On Tennessee side, Derrick Henry, Adam Humphries both sat out practice on Wednesday. Henry's got this nagging hamstring injury, but he still runs for 102 seemingly every week. So I don't know what to do at this point with him. And then they have a bunch of secondary injury issues. LaShawn Sims, Kenny Vaccaro, both limited participants in practice. I mentioned Adoree Jackson sat out. So a lot of secondary issues for Tennessee. We saw Houston's offense struggle a little bit against Denver and then get it going late. this game looks like it's, you know, one of the games on the slate that you would want to target. You know, two teams that have everything to play for, a hefty total. It's in a, you know, it's in fairly good weather conditions, it looks like, in Tennessee. Like, doesn't look like a lot of wind, doesn't look like precipitation, just kind of cool temperatures. It's weird that it's an AFC South game that we're targeting, Ricky, but I assume this is going to be one of the games you like on this slate.
Yeah, and Davis Maddock had one of my favorite tweets of the entire NFL season this past weekend. He tweeted, "Look, Ryan Tannehill is Peyton Manning now. I don't make the rules." And I don't think I can say it any better myself. Look, this is such a good matchup for him. Again, I mean, first of all, it's a battle between two of the bottom 10 DVOA passing defenses. Second of all, Drew, if I would have given you a quiz, well, and we weren't on this game, who would you have thought was the NFL leader by a wide margin in QB rating on play action passes? Obviously, since we're talking about it here, the answer is Ryan Tannehill. He has 137.5 QB rating on play action passes. Because Derrick Henry partially has been so good, and this defense is just susceptible to passers as a whole, only five defenses have allowed more passing yards than the Texan. Only four have allowed more passing touchdowns. So I love this spot, again, for Ryan Tannehill. You talked about the big total in this game. I'm assuming that Vegas isn't just saying Derrick Henry is going to carry this offense. I mean, Ryan Tannehill has looked really good. He's been at least 28 DraftKings points in three of his last five games. And he's found a guy who's his looks like his number one receiver in A.J. Brown. Okay, so amongst receivers with at least 30 targets, Drew, only Mecole Hardman and Adam Thielen have produced more fantasy points per target than Brown. So I think that has something to do with their play-action correlation, that he can just get open and he can be targeted downfield. But I love that duo again this week against a bad offense. I mean, you look at Pro Football Focus, the guy covering him has yielded 115-plus QB rating. He's already allowed six touchdowns, which is tied for sixth most in the league. Like, there's just so much to like about that side of the offense. And that's before even talking about the fact that DeAndre Hopkins, if there's no Will Fuller, I looked at it, he's averaging 12.3 targets per game with Fuller out compared to 9.3 targets with him. So I think that's relevant for Hopkins. But, I mean, it's a three-point spread, and they're playing for their lives, so I think there's going to be a heavy dose in general. I think there's just a logical run back here. I love the Tennessee side of this. I love running it back with DeAndre Hopkins, but obviously playing from behind Watson against the bottom 10 defense as well. I think there's a lot of ways to go in this game. My favorite's a Tannehill stack, but I'm going to have to check the ownership percentages towards the end of the week to see if that holds strong between him and Watson. I just know I'm going to want one of them. I'm just going to want to be heavier on the one that has less exposure from the masses, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to just take a moment of silence for my best ball season. I somehow found a way to invest as heavily as possible in two wide receivers on top 10 offenses in the league, Corey Davis and Kenny Stills and Will Fuller to that extent. And between the three of them, I feel like I got one playable week when Will Fuller went nuts. So RIP, best ball 2019, poor little out. This game obviously has a lot of intrigue to it. I think, you know, one of the things that is really behind the Ryan Tannehill resurgence here in Tennessee that I don't think is getting enough conversation, because I think all the conversation seems to flow around Derrick Henry and around Tannehill's play himself. And credit Tannehill, he's played very well. He's got basically Tyreek Hill on his team with A.J. Brown. What A.J. Brown is doing is out of control. As a rookie, he's got almost 800 receiving yards on just under 40 catches, basically averaging 20 yards a catch, stretching the field incredibly well, been ridiculously efficient on a yards per target basis. There's been a lot of really exciting rookie wide receivers to enter the league this season. I'm not sure any of them are as exciting as A.J. Brown. And man, he has been just incredible. So I think those Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown stacks are certainly still in play. The volume is always going to be a frustrating part of investing in this Tennessee offense, because they're going to want to run the ball so heavily, and you're kind of relying on these big plays to keep chugging along. I think you can still hope to get those. The secondary pieces are cheap enough with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith that I don't mind them as secondary pieces and stacks. But for me, I think at this point, it's hard to imagine Ryan Tannehill having a ceiling game without AJ Brown being involved. And so I, you know, all my Ryan Tannehill stacks, I think at this point, are probably going to have AJ Brown in them. You do want to check on ownership and where ownership comes in on this game, because honestly, if this is a game where like Ryan Tannehill and AJ Brown are one of the highest owned combinations on the entire slate, you should probably consider going underweight, even though the game feels so good and it feels so likely that they're going to hit, just because the volume is so inconsistent on this offense. And one week, the lack of volume is going to catch up. Like, you can't just continue to be the most efficient offense in all football every single week. We talk about this with regression, kind of, you know, it always eventually hits. And I've felt it really, really hard this year with Alvin Kamara. Not that I'm investing in Alvin Kamara to, like, you know, get, you know, 10 yards per touch like he was his rookie year and scoring every fourth touch. I just want him to be like at a normal level, but just in general, like, regression hits. So just be aware of ownership on this game. I'm more likely to play, personally, I'm more likely to play the Houston side because I think it will come at slightly lower ownership than the Tennessee side, just because the Houston side is more expensive. And for me, that would be Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins. And I do think this is a good Duke Johnson spot. If you think Tennessee can play from ahead, I think it's a really sneaky Duke Johnson spot. So I like this game. There's a lot of different ways I think you can play it, which is why even if like Tannehill and Brown are chalky, I still think there's ways that I can kind of find around it. I think if Fuller plays, it would actually be better, not only for the game stack, but I think for suppressing ownership a little bit. I think if Fuller's out, you're going to get that really, really heavy ownership on DeAndre Hopkins once again, because everybody's going to have seen that volume that we have noted the last few weeks. So I think that's something to certainly pay attention to. But yeah, this game is going to be on my radar. It's just a matter of how. And that will ultimately come with more information as we get further out on the week in terms of ownership. Let's move it over to Philadelphia visiting Washington here. Eagles 4.5 point, or 4 to 4.5 point favorites. In terms of the injury situation, I mean, the Eagles side, it's basically anybody who is listed as a wide receiver on the team is hurt. I don't know, like, we don't know who's going to be available yet, but Alshon Jeffery is done for the year. Nelson Agholor didn't practice on Wednesday. It's kind of a big deal because, you know, they and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was dealt with a hamstring injury towards the end of the game. He was not listed on the injury report on Wednesday, so I think he's okay. But they were basically down to playing a receiving trio, I guess, of Arcega-Whiteside, Greg Ward, and Josh Perkins. Greg Ward is a converted wide receiver from quarterback in college. Josh Perkins is a tight end that's been converted to wide receiver. They just don't have much. Now, Washington's been a team you've been able to attack kind of all ways during the course of the season, but this could be a sloppy game, and it's kind of indicated by this like under 40 total. In terms of injuries on the Redskins side, they lost Darius Geis for the season, so now it's the Adrian Peterson and Chris Thompson show. As it has been for a while, we've got also wide receiver injuries with Trey Quinn and Paul Richardson. They were unable to participate in practice. These teams that have nothing to play for, you tend to see them get more conservative with injury situations towards the end of the year. There's a lot of offensive line issues for the Redskins as well, with Donald Penn and Brandon Scherff having limited or missed practices as well. Ricky, is this a game you're targeting from a DFS perspective?
Very minor bits and pieces of this game. I mean, this is a game that I think if I were doing a full MME run, I would want a little Terry McLaurin, even though that price tag, honestly, is not overly appealing with Dwayne Haskins throwing to him. It's just been so inconsistent, the quality of the targets, but still a 24% projected target market share for him. 5,300 is but Philly is a team that has allowed the 5th most fantasy points to the position. They've already allowed 18 receiving touchdowns, so like I think he's at least worth a sprinkle. And on the other side, I think the only guy that I feel good about is Zach Ertz. Like, I'm fine, depending on who's healthy, having a sprinkle here and there of their receivers. But Zach Ertz, at least 11 targets in 3 of his last 4 games. You know he's getting the ball. That's, I think, all the only selling point there is there. There's no one really stretching the field, you know, to kind of create open space for him. So I think there will be a lot of defensive focus on him. And the running backs continue to be a bit of a mess, even though you could pretty much guarantee Miles Sanders for 5 targets a week. It was, you know, Boston Scott week last week. And I like to play guys who have the, you know, the touch upside to lead the backfield. I mean, sure, you can get the long play, but that's not what I love to rely on. I think Miles Sanders is okay, but honestly not excited about much in this game.
Ricky, have you looked at the prices on the Philadelphia players on DraftKings.com?
Greg Ward, your guy, who you were just bad-mouthing, I saw that.
Greg Ward is 3,000.
Yes.
JJ Arcega-Whiteside is 3,300. Nelson Agholor is 4,000. Boston Scott is 3,000. Good God, they're going to make me play a Philadelphia Eagle. Greg Ward, they decided to make his price. You know how they came up with this price tag? They said, you know, we're going to make him priced $1,000 for every drop touchdown that he has on Monday Night Football. And they came up with $3,000. So that's where we're at with Greg Ward. He's $3,000. I'm going to have to play some of these dudes. Washington is just such a favorable matchup for opposing offenses. Philadelphia has to win football games to try to win the division here. So I think the pedal's going to be on the metal, the foot's going to be on the pedal for as long as they can. That doesn't really mean a lot for what their offense has been. But I'm going to have to play these guys. Ertz is obviously the best play. But 6K at tight end is always difficult on DraftKings. Usually you're trying to find ways to generate a little salary relief. 6,700 on FanDuel I think is much better. Dallas Goedert is in play as well, I think, because he's going to be on the field a ton with these lack of receiving options. But man, the price tags on these Philadelphia secondary receivers, if Aguilar's out, I'm probably going to have to play some Greg Ward. And I'm not excited about it, but he's 3K, and I'm probably going to have to. Miles Sanders at 6K, probably a pass for me. Boston Scott is 3K. On a 13-game slate, I don't think I can go there. But yeah, Greg Ward is probably going to have some attention for me on DraftKings specifically. On FanDuel, you know, he's 4,900, and you really do need touchdowns a lot more on FanDuel, and I'm really not going to bet on that. But I think at 3K on DraftKings, he'd be in play. All right, let's go from an NFC East rivalry to an NFC North rivalry as Chicago travels to Green Bay. 4.5-point underdogs on the road here. The Bears with just an 18 implied total. In terms of injuries, Ben Broniker and Taylor Gabriel, who've missed the last two games with concussions, were still unable to attend practice on Wednesday. So that doesn't look so good after the longer layoff after a Thursday night game last week. Prince Amukamara was able to go full with his hamstring injury. Bobby Massey, the right tackle, missed practice with an ankle injury. For the Packers, Jimmy Graham, Kevin King, Geronimo Allison, and Billy Turner were all limited participants on Wednesday. Devontae Adams is on the injury report with a toe injury, but was a full participant. So I don't think big injury issues for the Packers. Some for Chicago, which is, you know, Javon Wims missed practice too. So their wide receiver core was kind of banged up. We'll see where it goes. But like an 18 implied total for the Bears, not sure there's a lot of DFS intrigue there, even though Trubisky has looked, I guess, back over the last 2 weeks. Are you buying on the Chicago Bears offense, Ricky?
No, I'm not. I saw someone tweeting like adjusted yards per snap leaders in the NFL. Dead last is Mitch Trubisky. So no, I'm not buying that. An 18 implied total. If anything in this game, I think I would play players on the other side of this game. This Bears defense is depreciating as the season goes on. Last week was only the second week in which they allowed over 400 total yards to an opponent. I know Dallas's offense is pretty good, so you know you can kind of take it for what it's worth. The two teams they have given that much up to have been New Orleans and Dallas, and they also Oakland got close 1 week at 398. But I do believe that this defense is not at this point as good as it was sold earlier in the year. The question then becomes, okay, so what do you do with that information? And the backfield's kind of annoying. I know we got an Aaron Jones week last week. We now have Aaron Jones priced at 7,300 and Jamal Williams priced at 4,200. So DraftKings is trying to force you into playing Jamal Williams, which is not something that I'm overly interested in, which means that you go with Devontae Adams against a difficult pass defense. I really would prefer to target a running back. But I think Adams' price tag relative to this slate is the one that's got the most intrigue from me. It's just not the most exciting of games.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, I did the Buffalo Bills rant on the pod of like last week of knowing exactly, having followed them for a few years through Mike, knowing exactly what's going to happen. And I know exactly what's going on with Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears right now. What's happening is Mitchell Trubisky is going to play just well enough that the Bears are going to consider that like they can continue down this path next year, and we're just going to get locked into more years of complete mediocrity at the quarterback position. I've seen this happen way too much. This was Rex Grossman. This was like we've done this, so I know exactly what's happening. So it will all come crashing down soon enough, but not enough to make the Bears move on. That's my prediction on Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears. This game is almost a full stay away for me, honestly. I think Devontae Adams is playable. Aaron Jones, I don't think you can play at that price tag, even if I think he can be successful. Like, it's just a really thin play when you're splitting carries with Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams, you're going to need the passing down work to really pay off that 4,200 tag in terms of any sort of like GPP winning upside. Like, yeah, he might ground out value, but when you're splitting carries with Aaron Jones, you're going to turn 10 touches into, you know, 20 DK points? Probably not. And on the Bears side, I'm just not interested in investing, honestly, offensively. I don't think there's a lot that they match up well with the Packers. Packers are a pretty good secondary. Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller would be possible plays, but I'm not really in here. So I'm probably going to say this is a full stay away game for me. Let's move over to Tampa Bay visiting Detroit. Controlled conditions in Detroit here. Tampa Bay, 3.5-point favorites on the road. The Bucs lost Mike Evans for the season with an Achilles injury. Jameis Winston was limited with right thumb and knee injuries. Ryan Griffin ended up taking some first-team snaps, so we'll have to pay attention to that. I think that obviously shapes this game immensely, whether it's Jameis or whether it's Ryan Griffin. In terms of Lions injuries, they placed Marvin Jones on injured reserve. So there's some issues there. Bo Scarborough was limited in practice with a rib injury. So this game, it's controlled conditions, is a decent total in the mid-40s. There's a lot of injuries opening up a lot of targets. I want to play this game. I also want to see who the heck is going to be available. But generally, Tampa Bay games have caught our attention this year, Ricky. Do they have your attention this week?
Yeah, with the offenses condensing a little bit on both sides, I think it does have my attention. I mean, I think most people, if they're going to be on full game stacks, will be on other games, and I think there's some stackability to this game. I mean, Jameis Winston has been a guy we've considered just using one pass catcher with because he focuses on guys so heavily in games where they go crazy that now he kind of has to do something like that with Chris Godwin. I mean, Justin Watson did see 8 targets last week, which is a little bit of an eye-opener. You know, Breshad Perriman has been a thing in this offense. He's been pretty consistent with his targets. And now O.J. Howard kind of has a bit of a, you know, extended role. It looks like they're actually going to start targeting him, which finally, it only took 13 weeks. But I think the Jameis Winston-Chris Godwin, you know, duo has more than double-digit target upside, and I think Chris Godwin is a really, really strong play on this slate. Over a 25% projected target market share, over a 31% of their receiving touchdowns, and so I think it's like the old Drew Dinkmeyer thought process is that even if it doesn't win you a tournament, I think it could bring you into some minimum cash-type builds if Chris Godwin has as big of a week as I think he will. And on the other side, I think the logical run back is going to be Kenny Galladay, but I'm actually kind of excited about the prospects of Danny Amendola's volume going up as well at 4,100. And if you're talking about, you know, how to make game stacks that have a little bit of affordability, I think foregoing Kenny Galladay for someone like Amendola, who now is projecting for over 20% of the target market share without Marvin Jones, he kind of moves up a notch on the totem pole. I think I have a ton of interest in that against the funnel to the pass sort of defense. There should be more volume, and what do you need from Danny Amendola to get you to, you know, to value is volume.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be an interesting one for me because, first of all, Ryan Griffin is 4,300 on DraftKings. So if Jameis Winston is unable to go, and I just saw a picture pop up on Twitter of Jameis Winston throwing tennis balls at practice on Thursday, Ryan Griffin is 4,300 for a Tampa Bay quarterback in controlled conditions, who's played pretty well in the preseason. So I think he would certainly be in play. This game is going to be on my radar for sure. Detroit, that's the trickier side for me because Tampa Bay, I feel confident Bruce Arians' offense is going to throw it around, and I feel like he would have confidence in Griffin or Winston to do so. I think if Winston plays, it's a little bit trickier just because there's that injury risk of him like leaving the game early. We saw that happen last week, and then he came back and kept firing touchdowns and interceptions like he does in the fourth quarter. I think on Detroit's side, you know that they want to run the ball and they want to kind of hide their quarterback, but they can't against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's run defense has been so effective. I don't expect Bo Scarborough to be super effective, so they're going to have to throw it. The concern for me is I don't trust David Blau enough to be like a high completion percentage quarterback that I'm super interested in Danny Amendola. I'm more interested in trying to find the big play, and that big play is Kenny Galladay. The concern for me is where will the market share or where will the public be on this in terms of ownership? He's very expensive. He's almost 8K on FanDuel. But everybody's been wanting to play wide receivers against Tampa Bay all year long. And now you've got him without Marvin Jones. So I'm very interested in tracking that, but I'm more interested in Galladay than Amendola for sure. I think Amendola's price tag is better on DraftKings and more viable there. But in general, the way that I want to play this game is Tampa Bay stacks with one bring back on the Detroit side, and it's more likely going to be Galladay than Amendola in most of my builds. Very interested in not only Chris Godwin, who I think is underpriced for a possible, you know, real target hog type role where he could get 13, 15 type targets. I think he's really underpriced, but I also think it's O.J. Howard season again. Like, I think we're back with O.J. Howard. I think they're going to split him out wide. I think they're going to use him more as a receiver in the passing game. They're going to use those routes that stretch the field a little bit more because they use, remember, they use Godwin on all these like kind of intermediate routes, and then Mike Evans was the guy stretching the field. They can still do that a little bit with Breshad Perriman, but O.J. Howard, 82% of the snaps the week before, 87% of the snaps last week. He's only 3,500. I'm in on him. Justin Watson is a guy that has a pretty good athletic profile and obviously got 8 targets last week. So at 3,700 on DraftKings, I'd be pretty in on him. Perriman, I think, is a guy that you could, you know, take a shot on in GPP because his targets are going to be very far down the field and he is going to be utilized in the red zone because he has some size there. I just don't like the price tags on either side. He's 6,400 on FanDuel. He's 4,500 on DraftKings. I don't love those price tags. So for me, I'm looking at Jameis or Griffin, whoever starts the quarterback, stacked with two of, I think, Godwin, Watson, Howard is my most likely play with a bring back from Detroit, and I like this game quite a bit. It will be one of the games that I target this week. Miami, moving on. Miami travels to the New York Giants. Patrick Laird comes to New York. The Dolphins-Giants game here. The Dolphins are 3.5-point underdogs. Dolphins have a ton of injuries here. Alan Hearns was held out of practice due to an ankle and knee injury on Wednesday. Devontae Parker and Albert Wilson were limited with concussions. I don't know who's left after those guys. I think it's Isaiah Ford, and then I have no idea. I have no idea who else is left. So it could be Gesicki week for you. Oh, I guess they have Matt Collins. They took him from Philadelphia, like as if Philadelphia needed to get rid of receivers. On New York's side of the ball, Daniel Jones was limited with an ankle injury. A decision on his status for Sunday won't be made till later in the week, so we'll have to track that one. Limited participants were also Brett Ellison and Evan Ingram and Golden Tate. Obviously, Brett Ellison and Evan Ingram have been missing games, so that would be a change. This game is hard to talk about for me until we see how the injury situations settle out outside of our Laird and Savior, Patrick, who played over 80% of the snaps, got a decent size of the target share, got a bunch of the carries. I think, you know, he's a guy we can comfortably talk about this week.
Yeah, for the brand, I feel like I have to be on board with this Patrick Laird take, especially if we get some of those receivers healthy. I feel like this Miami total is kind of low. So this is one of the games in the optimizer, if you do get a Devontae Parker in, that I would probably bring them up to like 23 points because I think that Vegas would be low against this bad defense. And I think that would move Laird into even more lineups at 4,500, having been pretty much the workhorse last week. I mean, this is a guy who's almost identical in terms of the target market share in the, you know, obviously in the passing game, it's targets, but it's Saquon Barkley. And Saquon Barkley, 7,700, he's 4,500. YPT, they're pretty close as well. Market share of receiving touchdowns is pretty close, so it's just a really good price for Patrick Laird on an offense that potentially could have no pass catchers. Like, if those guys are out in this, and you want to just leave it at a 21.5 total, you've still got Patrick Laird as a top two overall value at the position there. And as long as he, you know, can either rack up the targets, which it looks like he's going to do, and or get some of the carries in the red zone, I don't see a complete flop from Laird in this situation. You know, obviously there's the injury scenario, which I don't like to talk about, but it's obviously possible. But let's assume he stays healthy. I think it's very unlikely that he kills you, which makes me kind of excited to play him.
So I think the way that I view Laird is the workload is going to be good enough that even with a lack of efficiency, you could possibly get a ceiling type performance.
Yeah.
The thing that you want to be cognizant of is how much ownership is there. If there's a ton of ownership on a player, then you have to think through how likely are they to get a ceiling performance. And so that's the thing that I'm not sure Laird To me, it looks like a player that is going to get volume but might not be an efficiency monster, especially in this offense. So as a result, I want to be very cognizant of the ownership. I think he's going to be a very good cash game play. I think in tournaments, you just want to be thoughtful on that. The guy to me that is really going to stand out as a pretty good tournament play is going to be Gesicki. Giants have always struggled against the tight end position. I know, like, you know, last week Zach Ertz got him for 2 touchdowns, and that's a weird situation because it's freaking Zach Ertz, and it's also a team that had no wide receivers. So if anybody was going to get him, it basically was tight ends. But just in general, historically, the Giants have been vulnerable to the tight end position. The injuries to the wide receiver position are going to make it difficult for Ryan Fitzpatrick to have faith in kind of the new guys that are coming out. I think you'll see a lot of Gesicki opportunities. I don't think you'll see a ton of ownership because I think Laird is going to be played. And I think if one of Hearns or Parker are available, I think those guys might be played a little bit. So I think Gesicki might fly under the radar a little bit. I'm fairly interested in him. And then on the Giants side, I think, you know, this is one of the better matchups you'll get all year for Saquon Barkley. We did not see the target share spike that we hoped to see with Eli Manning at quarterback. We still don't know who will be quarterback this week. But I think you can play. I think you can pretty much play any of these Giants guys. I would not stack Eli Manning, but I would consider stacking Daniel Jones in this game. And then I think you can play this game with runbacks, with Laird or Gesicki. I'm just more likely to stack the Giants side than I am the Dolphins side. But this game is interesting to me. I think both of these defenses are very vulnerable. We'll have to see what the weather looks like. Early forecasts have it for wind. We'll have to keep an eye on that, but. I'm kind of, you know, subtly interested in this game, kind of keeping my options open. Let's move over to New England visiting Cincinnati, where New England has been grinding the tape all week. They are nine and a half point favorites against the Bengals. In terms of injury issues, Julian Edelman was held out of practice as he continues to deal with knee and shoulder injuries. Mohamed Sanu was limited. N'Keal Harry was also listed on the injury report, but he was a full practice. AJ Green still not practicing. John Ross limited for Cincinnati. You know, from a DFS perspective, Ricky, I'll be honest, this game does not intrigue me very much. Are you going to be on it?
I am not. The only reason I was excited to talk about this game is so I could ask if you've seen the movie Argo.
I have.
That was basically what the report seemed like to me. It's like they had a Ben Affleck there, like acting like they were filming at a Cincinnati Bengals game, except in this one there was an unhappy ending for the heroes. So I just wanted to make the Argo reference. But besides that, I really don't like much. I mean, you've got this decent total for New England. They have not been running like a fully functioning machine. And you look at the price tags, and they're all negative values. Like, the only thing I think I have legit interest in is the New England defense.
Yeah, I think New England defense is playable. I think Sony Michel on FanDuel is playable, but it's been tricky because they've been mixing Rex Burkhead in a bit more, so it's going to be harder. Oh, Rex Burkhead revenge game for those out there on Narrative Street. Forgot about that one. But I think it's tough, you know, when they're mixing carries. But I think, you know, Cincinnati's been vulnerable against the run all year. New England's obviously struggled offensively. I think this is a situation where they just kind of try to grind this game out. I think Michel is viable in GPPs. I think New England defense is viable in GPPs. Outside of that, I'm probably not playing that game at all. On the Cincinnati side, Joe Mixon's been getting an insane workload of late, but I can't play a running back on a team with like a 15 implied total. John Ross is really cheap and he can break a big play, but I do not trust him getting off against the New England secondary. So, yeah, I'm probably on Sony Michel on FanDuel a little bit in GPP, small percentage play there, Patriots defense, and that'll probably do it for me. Let's keep it moving as we try to grind our way through these 13 games. We're now onto the 4 o'clock games where Minnesota visits the Chargers. In terms of injury situations here, Alexander Mattison missed practice on Wednesday due to an ankle injury. He's expected to play on Sunday, so no changes to projections there yet. We'll have to figure that out. But the bigger news is that Minnesota sounds like they're going to get back Adam Thielen, which we've had some fits and starts where we thought he was going to come back, but it's not the case. It hasn't been the case yet. It looks like it's going to be the case this week. In terms of the Chargers, they're pretty healthy. They only played 3/4 of football last week, so they got a little bit of time off in that Jacksonville game. Mike Williams was limited in practice on Wednesday, but otherwise everybody's healthy here. From a DFS perspective, though, honestly, this game's a tough one for me to get excited about. The Chargers offense has been really spread out with all the skill talent that they have lately. You're relying on a lot of efficiency and big plays, which you got from Mike Williams and Austin Eckler last week. But it's a really tough matchup against Minnesota. And then Minnesota with Adam Thielen coming back, pretty hard to get excited about them. I guess Thielen's got a pretty good price tag on DraftKings, but not an outstanding total here. Are you going to be playing much of this game, Ricky?
No, because the piece I want to be excited about is Adam Thielen. And you look at this Chargers team, they've been really strong against opposing receivers. The third fewest fantasy points allowed to the position. We're just not sure if Thielen is fully healthy, if he'll be on any kind of a pitch count. There's a bunch of issues that could arise there. The price tag is good. I still am open to having some Adam Thielen shares, but I need some more information before I can feel good about having him in like a single entry or anything. And honestly, I don't even think that's where I would play him. I think it's more of just an MME guy.
All right. Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of Dalvin Cook, but you know, not super excited. I like the price on FanDuel a lot more. On FanDuel, I'll probably play some Dalvin Cook, but just not a great spot with Minnesota's offense kind of getting a key piece back and everybody priced up around it. Let's move on to Cleveland traveling to Arizona. Cleveland, slight favorites on the road here. In terms of injury situations here, several limited participants for Cleveland. Odell Beckham Jr. with the groin injury, Jarvis Landry with the hip injury, limited. David Njoku also limited with a knee injury, so a lot of pass-catching options there for Baker Mayfield were all limited in Wednesday's practice. On the Arizona side of the ball, Andy Isabella and Christian Kirk were both limited participants. Christian Kirk with an ankle issue there. So certainly some issues to concern ourselves with. Pretty high total here, you know, 48 in Arizona, controlled conditions. Ricky, this game have your attention?
Absolutely it does. I was kind of shocked, by the way, I don't know why I'm leading with this, but I was kind of shocked to see that Njoku only 37.5% of the snaps last week. So obviously when you play Arizona, the first place you look is tight ends, and I don't think that's the part of this Cleveland team that excites me this week. I think it's the condensed nature of their wide receivers and just how all the targets seem to roll through them. It's another Baker Mayfield week for me, Drew, and the last one went pretty well. We hadn't been excited for him for a while. I think against Arizona, who's a defense that is definitely susceptible via the air, that I feel good once again, them coming into, like you mentioned, these controlled environments and having just the condensed nature of this passing game that you don't really have to guess. The one guy who I think could be, you know, throw off the stack a little bit is if they do look to target the tight end in the red zone, and I think Njoku could steal a touchdown. So if you wanted to mix and match your stacks with maybe one of the receivers and throw him in just in case he does catch a touchdown, I'm okay with it. But I think for the most part, Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham are double stacks that you have to have interest in, and this is going to be one of my highest ownership stacks of the entire weekend just because I know where the volume is going, or at least I think I know.
Yeah, I think based on what we've seen to this point in the year, we feel pretty confident that we think we know. My concern is just late in the season when these teams, you know, have less to play for, and Odell Beckham's got, you know, these murmurs about not being interested in playing there, and he's playing through injuries and whatnot. I'm just a little bit concerned that, you know, the rug gets pulled out from under us. The good news here is the price tags are really, really affordable. 6,700 for Landry, 6,400 for Beckham, 5,500 for Kirk. The stacks with the bringbacks kind of form themselves there with Mayfield, Landry, Beckham, bring it back with Christian Kirk, kind of call it a day. I want to see where ownership is on this before I get too excited about, though, because I think that's going to be the key for this game, just because when two teams have nothing to play for, I'm a little bit worried about investing heavily late in the season at high ownership. So that's the thing that I'll be monitoring during the week. But I think, you know, from a pace perspective, from a game environment, controlled conditions, I think it's one that you certainly want to keep in consideration. Just keep an eye on the ownership projections. I'll tackle that on Saturday in terms of how I'm playing it on our premium podcast at Daily Roto. All right, Jaguars traveling to Oakland. Jaguars, 6.5-point underdogs here. Jaguars are just, I mean, they have been so bad of late, so many injuries, and now DJ Chark was unable to practice. It sounded like he was going to be lost for the season, but they're saying they're going to let him travel and have a game time decision. I have no idea why they would do that at this point in the season, so we're not expecting DJ Chark to play. DD Westbrook was also limited. They had some guys, Seth DeValve came back from an oblique injury, but in general, like, their defense has been so banged up. On Oakland's side, I think the injury issue that's really the one to pay attention to is Josh Jacobs, who, you know, said he's going to play this week. He was limited in practice on Wednesday. If he doesn't play, DeAndre Washington saw a huge, huge workload last week, a much bigger workload than Josh Jacobs has been getting, especially in the passing game as well, and was dominant, really, with it. He's 4,700, and against Jacksonville's defense, who's been getting murdered on the ground of late, I would like him quite a bit. Even at 7K for Josh Jacobs, I think he would be in play. If you got word that he was going to get a full workload, which is something we're not projecting currently, we're projecting a little bit more of a split. But Ricky, are you in on this game?
So I'm in specifically on one piece, and when I was doing research last night, I thought that piece was going to be D.D. Westbrook on the run back because I just assumed the volume would be there. You know, that just is the logical way to go. I like Chris Conley, 3,600 on DraftKings, and you know, you think about it, D.D. Westbrook was already getting a decent share here. Chris Conley's the one moving up the ladder. We have him projected for over a 20% target market share, but I looked at this Raiders defense and the highest scoring receivers against this defense. Here's the four highest scorers. A.J. Brown, who you've mentioned is basically like Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill was on this list. Robbie Anderson, and then Keenan Allen. And I think the guy who doesn't fit there is Keenan Allen. It's mostly been the ones who have had success against this defense, the guys to take the top off. And to me, that's not D.D. Westbrook in this offense. That's the Chris Conley slash D.J. Chark kind of talent here. And Chris Conley's the cheaper one. So to me, it's like a no-brainer that you look at the skill set correlation there. You look at the price tag. You look at the projection in targets for the price tag. I really like Chris Conley, even as a one-off, you know, in lineups to fit more expensive players. We've kind of talked about a few cheap receivers so far. Of the ones we have talked about, I think Conley's number one on my list.
All right. Well, look at that. Nice little GVP take from Ricky. Chris Conley, I don't think he'll be heavily owned, so I think that's a pretty interesting one. This game is not stackable to me. I'm definitely not interested in the Jacksonville side. Their offense has been kind of inept. On the Oakland side, I don't feel good. Like, Carr's price is fine. I don't feel good enough about who I can pair him with. I could play him with Darren Waller as like a single stack, but I don't feel good enough about Tyrell Williams' volume. So I'm having a hard time double stacking. I don't feel good enough about Jacksonville's offense kind of keeping the game going back and forth. So I think this is more of a correlated skill players game for me. And that's where Chris Conley would come in when on lineups where, you know, I'm using Darren Waller or one of the running backs, perhaps for Oakland, I would be more interested in kind of a Chris Conley. I think he is fine as a one-off just because I think what you're saying conceptually makes sense. If DJ Chark is out, Oakland is beaten kind of down the field. Think those things make sense and the price tag is good. Certainly not a cash game play for me in this game unless Josh Jacobs sits and then you've got DeAndre Washington. I think Waller is okay, but I think there's probably other spots that I'd rather attack. Moving on to San Francisco and Atlanta. San Francisco double-digit favorites here at home in terms of injury situation here. Devonta Freeman was a limited part, was missed practice, on Wednesday. I think that's more of a maintenance thing, but it is with a knee issue, and he's been a guy who's kind of battled injuries all year, so we'll have to monitor that. Julio Jones was a limited participant. Atlanta lost Calvin Ridley due to IR last week in the mass murder of the wide receiver position last week that happened in week 14, where kind of everybody went down. On the 49ers side, not too many injuries here. They did place Marquise Goodwin on IR, but I don't think he hasn't really been playing. So nothing to really concern ourselves with. It does sound like there's been some reports around San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan basically saying his hand has been forced by Raheem Mostert in terms of, you know, they want to spread the carries around, but Mostert is playing so well that they feel like they have to give him the carries. San Francisco's offense, I think, is very likely to be successful here. But I honestly, they are one of the toughest offenses for me to invest in because they can break off such big plays with guys like Emmanuel Sanders and Mostert and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle. But their offense is so spread out that it's always hard for the projections to kind of get there. I think I will have some of them on this slate, but I think it will be individual plays. I don't think it will be stacks. I do not trust Atlanta's offense to be able to keep this game kind of moving at a faster pace.
Yeah, I can identify the guys that I want bits and pieces of, but I agree with you. Because they're so spread out, there's not like a logical like Jimmy Garoppolo plus two pass catchers that I feel great about, especially because I think they're obviously a run-focused offense, and they've got three backs that they could rely on. And now they say Mostert is the guy. The question is, will there be enough touches? Because last week he supposedly forced their hand. He touched the ball 12 times. And to me, I want guys touching the ball more than that. Now, this is one of the best rushing offenses and the most rushing-centric offenses. So, you know, I think that makes the case stronger for Mostert. But every time you think you know these three-headed, you know, backfields, it feels like it changed. So I feel like there's still a like legit level of volatility here with Mostert. Definitely a guy I want some exposure to. You know, I was a big fan of Tevin Coleman in weeks past before he handed over the torch.
Yep.
He's just not a guy that I want to take a heavy, heavy position on just in case things do hit the fan. The other guys, for sure, Deebo Samuel, who looks like they're using in all sorts of roles. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders and Kittle. I think my order of preference there would be Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Emmanuel Sanders, but I'm not 100% sure. Kittle plays a position that I need him the most at. When you look at, you know, the other players at the position, it's just not an amazing week for tight end. So Kittle is amongst the top values at the position. But yeah, I mean, not a full game stack for me. I know San Francisco's defense looked awful last week. They were in the Superdome against a pretty good offense. I don't expect any of that this week. So not really excited about Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think Kittle, you know, at a thin tight end position is certainly in play. Man, Deebo Samuel's looked really good this year, and I got that situation really wrong in preseason. I really thought Marquise Goodwin was going to be a great play in best ball leagues because of his ability to stretch the field, because of where he was drafted the year before in terms of his rapport with Jimmy Garoppolo, and because Deebo Samuel was not seeing first-team snaps in the preseason. Deebo Samuel has made me look very foolish during the course of the years. He's played very, very well. The challenge is obviously just the volume. It's very difficult to get volume from the San Francisco passing offense. So it's probably Kittle for me and maybe a sliver of Emmanuel Sanders or Deebo Samuel or Mostert, but not a ton, which is always concerning given this team has the highest implied total on the slate at 29. All right, final game of this 13-game extravaganza. The Rams travel to Dallas here. Rams favored on the road going into Dallas, and I think, you know, Dallas has really hurt their reputation the last few weeks with how they've played. In terms of injury issues, just one player missed practice on Wednesday for the Rams. It was Gerald Everett. Obviously, they have not missed him. Tyler Higbee's played great in his absence from the Cowboys side of the ball. Linebacker Sean Lee and Leighton Vander Esch were the only two players who did not participate in practice. Michael Bennett, Lyle Collins, Jeff Heath, Byron Jones, Zach Martin, and Tony Pollard were all limited participants. So, you know, from a skill position player injury, both of these teams were fairly static. I think the big thing that, you know, came away from last week for me was the Rams' personnel usage was very, very different than what we've seen historically. We did not see Cooper Kupp on the field very much at all. They went to a lot of these two wide sets with Josh Reynolds and Robert Woods, who are their best run blockers, and use heavier sets with the tight ends. The Higbee played 97% of snaps, Woods 98%, Cooper Kupp 28%, wow. Brandon Cooks 38% of snaps. So that's interesting because, you know, we haven't seen that before. We have seen, you know, the snaps for Higbee and Everett kind of on the rise, but we hadn't seen Kupp and Cooks kind of get decimated on the snap share that way. It's just 1 week. I don't know if I want to make a huge deal of it, but it is making me more. It does make me pause a little bit more in terms of investing in like a Cooper Kupp. I think the guy I'm most interested in this game from the Rams side of the ball is Robert Woods and Todd Gurley. Gurley's usage is back to like Gurley from last year. Another situation where, you know, I definitely messed up in best ball season where I felt like Malcolm Brown at this time of the year would be the guy because I didn't think Gurley's knees would hold up. They figured out with Gurley played 80% of the snaps last week and had one of his biggest workloads of the season.
Yeah, I think it does give me pause for Cooper Kupp, obviously. And you look at the susceptibility of the Dallas defense, it kind of works too perfectly with the guys who played the big snaps last week. This has been a worse defense against outside receivers than against slot receivers. It's been a pretty good slot defense, so would it make sense for them to use a ton of Cooper Kupp in this matchup? Robert Woods is the correlation play there, and they've quietly been a bottom 10 tight end defense, and you said Tyler Higbee, 97% of the snaps, went over 100 yards again. So it just makes too much sense for those guys to be the guys again, but logically is not always how the NFL works. It could have just been a game plan thing, and you could, you know, obviously see them revert back to more receivers this week. I happen to like a lot of Brandon Cooks and Tyler Higbee this week, if only for the correlation purposes, knowing there's some volatility with the play calling. Then the Dallas side, I mean, this Rams defense I respect, but you've got them projecting for 63 plays this week. And, you know, they put 400 yards on the Bears last week. So I think there's obviously a path to success. Dak Prescott only 6,300. Of the quarterbacks in this game, I feel better about him. And then I think I would be running it back with one of the guys you feel good about with the Rams. Assuming that they're playing from catch up, you know, playing catch up, that could mean more passing yards for Dak Prescott than even Jared Goff. So it is a game that I'm at least mildly interested in.
Yeah, I'm like, the price tags are okay on the Cowboys guys. Don't mind Michael Gallup. I think that'll come with low ownership. But I'm not super excited about this game from a stack perspective. I think I like the defenses a little bit more than I like the offenses here, and I think both teams are going to lean on the run a little bit more. So this, again, might be another kind of correlated skill player game for me as opposed to the quarterbacks involved. Yeah, I have a hard time getting around Goff and Dak. I don't mind. I do agree with you that I like Dak a little bit more than Goff, but I think in general, it's a game that I don't think I'll have a huge position in. I think the games I'm most excited about this week are probably that Tennessee-Houston game, Tampa Bay-Detroit, Miami and the Giants, and that Cleveland-Arizona game. And this all depends on kind of how ownership stacks out on these games. But early on, those are the games that I'm most excited about this week. So, Ricky, any final thoughts before we leave the people here for Week 15?
Yeah, lots of Chris Conley this week. I can't stress that enough. I love him this week, and if you're looking for ways, which you will be when you play around with roster construction, I've kind of been doing it during the podcast, you're going to need cheap plays somewhere. Tight end is certainly one way to go, but if you fit both of them, I think you'll kind of love the direction you can take it with multiple superstars alongside it. So I don't often feel this good about a cheap receiver, so I just wanted to kind of reiterate.
All right, there we have it. Chris Conley at Ricky when it goes disastrously wrong or incredibly great. Either way, just get in those mentions at our Sanders DFS. All right, Ricky, that'll do it for us. Did I get that Twitter handle right? Because I just said it off memory. I want to make sure. I did.
You did.
All right, good. All right, that'll do it for us for this Week 15 edition of the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, the flagship edition. Make sure to tune in on Friday as Davis Maddock goes around the NFL with a guest and gives his takes on his picks against the spread. If you are enjoying all of the free content we're putting out on this Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast Network, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Those ratings and the reviews really help keep us being able to do this for free. So for Ricky Sanders, for myself, Drew Dinkmeyer, I want to wish you guys the best of luck in all your games in Week 15. We'll be back Week 16 next Thursday, December 19th, to break it all down for you. Best of luck, everyone.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.